Who the bloody hell's that?
Morning, Ange.
Ah, Anthony. How are we?
I'm really well. How are you?
Come on in.
I will do, thank you.
Did that sound staged?
Just a little.
No,
it's
fine. Yeah.
I'm going to embrace the whole lounge pant thing next time. I'm going to put my University of New Hampshire lounge pants on.
You should indeed.
You're listening to The Corona Diaries, a sometimes random and often irreverent attempt to understand the psyche of singer Steve Hogarth. Hello and welcome to chapter 206 of the Corona Diaries.
What happened at 205? Have we done that?
That was last week.
Oh, bugger me.
Yeah, it's because you didn't edit, you see. You've lost track, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been slacking.
Yeah. We're going to get to our guest in a minute, but before we do, H, what is with the knitwear?
Oh, don't start on my knitwear.
Your knitwear's fantastic.
Oh, dude, are you digging it?
I'm digging the knitwear, but I'm not used to seeing you in knitwear.
Yeah, the Grattan catalogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just sort of... Yeah, I do have knitwear, but not much, and it's usually in the back of the wardrobe. And I found this about 3 days ago, and so I haven't stopped wearing it since. Because that's how my wardrobe functions when I'm not on stage. I just wear whatever I find in the, you know, in the back of the wardrobe, irrespective of whether the colours go together, and wear it for weeks on end till somebody tells me to stop. Then I look for something else.
Okay. Like when you wore a T-shirt for 5 days on a cruise.
That kind of thing.
Well, I'm digging the knitwear. The knitwear is fantastic. I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
All the listeners... Can you just listen to this knitwear? Oh, I say.
You nearly said suit you, sir, there, didn't you?
I didn't.
We need to introduce our guest. Obviously, if you listened to last week, you'll know that we're going through an ad before it's dark and we're getting a different member of the band on to speak about a different track. And we're doing the tracks in chronological order, which means they're on Reprogram the Gene this week. And joining us... And I'm really, really pleased about this because it's just lovely to see him. Is Pete Trousers. Pete Travis, how are you?
I'm very well. Yeah, I'm good, actually. I'm, you know, sort of getting. I'm recovering, as I'm sure everybody knows, from the surgery that I had. And, yeah, it's going well.
You've assumed legendary status, Pete.
I know. I've got to milk that. I've got to make sure that I... Take full advantage.
Yeah. You should.
I will. Oh, I'm going to. Don't worry. Yeah.
There'll be people all over the world now applauding at the mere mention of your name on this podcast. They'll all be clapping in there.
I know. I need a big cheer.
We'll pipe it in for the recording.
We'll have a whip round for a sound effect.
How much is a cheer these days?
I don't know.
Well, depends how big a cheer you want, really, I suppose.
I mean, to be fair, with what you've been through of late, I think you deserve at least a reasonable cheer, don't you?
How many people, then? Come on, put your money where your mouth is.
I reckon you need the equivalent noise that the Coventry fans were making when you were at Wembley.
Oh, thank you so much for mentioning that. That was a wonderful day, or almost like when you walk through a golf course. It was a wonderful day, spoiled really. But we won in the end. But boy, did we make heavy weather of it!
In all seriousness, you know, did you deserve to? It was part of you hoping Coventry might do it, just because it would have been such a great.
Absolutely not.
All right,
don't be silly.
Well, that's Manchester United fans for you, folks.
Oh, that's. I think that's every fan in the country, really.
It's Spoken like a true Sheffield United fan.
Exactly.
There,
I was rooting for Coventry, I'll tell you.
Of course you were. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, they played better than we did. But, you know, hey, we got the breaks.
Like, you got the breaks in the end.
Wow.
We did. Do you know what was really funny is that the goal that they scored right before the end, if someone hasn't heard it yet, then spoiler alert, but hasn't seen it even. The goal they scored right before the end, before it was disallowed, a lot of people, including myself and Callum, I went with my son Callum, started to walk out. And then he said, oh, hold on, they're taking a bit of time over this. We should hang on before we, you know, before the point of no return. And then so this kind of emptying out of the Manchester United side, all of a sudden they all came rushing back in. And then we managed to see, the penalties.
Were you trying to beat the traffic?
No. No, but, you know, I probably needed a wee because I always need a wee in these situations.
You've got to remember what he's been through, Ant.
Yes, yeah. Actually, that wasn't the greatest. In terms of, you know, cardio recovery, that probably wasn't the greatest game for you, was it?
No. Well, no, I mean, to be fair, and, you know, I've followed United for long enough to know what we're like. I mean, it's never been any different. All the glory years of Best and Law and Charlton, they still managed to lose some terrible games that they should have won, even back in those days. So it's never really been any different. I think for a neutral, it was probably a good game.
Oh, yeah.
It was probably great for all the, you know, all the people, like you say, Sheffield fans. And
oh, it's nearly great for all the football.
Yeah, you know. Well, you always hope for a bit of giant slaying, don't you? And that's what the FA Cup's about.
But not that particular day. maybe the day before, you know.
Yeah, that would have been better.
or maybe in the final. You never know.
You never know.
Yeah.
Well, you never know what's going to happen.
That'll be the time for it, won't it?
So you're classing yourself as the underdog in the final, aren't you?
Well, I think that's probably what everybody else is classing us as well.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think we've got to play a little bit better than that if we want to beat Man City. But, you know, you just don't know what happens in these things because weird things can happen.
Mm. I'm with you. And we shouldn't
dwell on football.
Well, no, I was going to move off football and move on to you just to say.
Oh, okay, me. Yeah.
How, in all seriousness, I mean, because you look really, really well.
Yeah.
And to be fair, your Instagram's full of photos of you looking really, really well as well.
No.
To the point that you could almost be forgiven for saying, did he just fancy a few weeks off? And actually, nothing happened to him at all.
Was it a deep fake? Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So how is the recovery going?
It's going well. It is going well. I've had a bit of a hiccup. And part of that is that I can't pronounce my words anymore. No, but in all seriousness, there's a thing called post-op anxiety that a lot of people suffer from these kind of surgeries. And I've had a little bit of that, which was kind of triggered by something that I should have tried to avoid, but I kind of agreed to do something for someone. I agreed to play bass for someone and then realised that the deadline was ridiculously too short for me to be able to achieve it. So I had to say no. I'm quite late on as well in his project. It was just a timing thing. I'd agreed to do it last year and said, I'll get round to it after Christmas. And of course I couldn't. So, and that kind of triggered off this kind of anxiety, which has ended up, you know, even the simplest of tasks, like driving to a hospital appointment, became a really big deal for me, you know, which is odd. But but I've always been a bit of a worrier all my life, you know. I'm one of those. So it's kind of manifested itself in that a bit. But I'm working through that.
I do have a bit of knowledge of that because my father-in-law had a similar surgery and had a little phase like that.
Mm. I mean, it's very common and they offer various counselling courses and things, which I've signed up for.
What about drugs? Don't they offer you some juicy drugs for that kind of
thing? Well, they can do, yeah, but I figured...
The bastards.
I've been on quite a lot of drugs in hospital, actually. I mean, it was ridiculous when I signed the... I call it a disclaimer, if you understand. It's not a disclaimer. You know, it's just a consent form. I say, oh, right, yes, yeah, the consent form then. And they tick off all of these things that may happen. It's like, well, you may be paralysed or you may be this. But there was more chance of death than there was of some of the other things.
So not so bad then.
I thought, oh, right, this is actually serious, isn't it? You know, it was at that point the night before when I had to sign all this stuff where I thought, yeah, this is actually quite serious. Because up until then, it was like I was wanting the surgery because I knew that was what I needed. And then I got the, yeah, you're going to Harefield today. And I was like, this is great. This is exactly what I need. And then it made me think about it all, you know, which was odd. Well, this is cheerful, isn't it? Anyway, I'm doing fine, to be honest. And one of the reasons why I've looked so well is because just before Christmas, we went away to Mauritius and I had a wonderful tan. So when I was sitting up in bed in hospital, everyone said, well, you look great. I said, yeah, it's still my tan. Hasn't faded.
Well, you do look great.
Well, thank you.
When do you expect to be back with the boys then?
Ah, we have a date. We have a date to start, which is the 8th, I think. 8th or 9th of next month.
May, yeah. But you're not to stress over it. You're not to stress over it. If you can't
I'm not. Actually, Fiona and I both agreed that I need to get back. I need to get back into, you know, life again.
Even so, you've got to feel ready. I mean, you've worked with us long enough to know that there won't be a great wailing and weeping if we get another fortnight off.
Yeah, I'll just miss a couple of cups of tea and some biscuits, probably.
That's right.
or a tub of jelly sweets, you know, Haribo's or something.
And is the racket club missing your Tupperware? Because you are the Tupperware provider, aren't you? Yeah. You're the guy that takes all your separate things in Tupperware.
Well, this is a good nerdy conversation, isn't it? Yeah, I do actually take things into I can't. I don't even want to say it. Sorry, it's too.
It's too all nerdy. Been recycled.
Well,
it's all been recycled into bed sheets.
I decided a while ago that I would bring in my own food because I just wanted to eat a bit more healthily. It has slipped a little bit. Not every Tupperware box I bring in is completely healthy, but that was the general idea. And I'm too tight to buy anything from the shop as well, or the cafe. Well, we didn't used to have a cafe, but now we do. But I still bring food in because I quite like food that is prepared. I usually prepare it, you know, so I know what I'm eating. And,
H, are you... Jan, this is nothing to do with Reprogram the Gene either. He's just come up because Pete's just said it. Are you the tightest band in rock and roll?
He was worried about us running out of Reprogram the Gene really quickly, wasn't he?
No, it's been 17 minutes. Very good,
not gone near it yet.
Do you want to know what make of Tupperware I prefer?
Yeah, please, actually, yes. Yes, go on.
I have no idea.
All right, okay. are you the tightest band in rock and roll? Because all of you will say things like, oh, I'm not paying for that.
I'll not have that. Yeah, I think we probably are, actually.
I would say everyone except me, and except for the fact that I'd blagged quite a lot of microphones out of you, hadn't I, in the past.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Perhaps that wouldn't be entirely... I'd be a bit disingenuous.
Disingenuous.
I think it would have been... I mean, it's we're not actually... I mean, you, for example, Steve, you've bought a number of lovely guitars over the years.
Yeah, but not for anybody else.
Oh no! Of course not. I
keep in Eastern Europe going in compressors, aren't you?
That's true.
Oh, you're the compressor king. I just used a multi-band compressor that was just in a list of things on my recording device.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm too tight to buy them. No, I'm not actually. I just don't know what I'd want to buy. And I'm not really that good at that kind of stuff, to be honest, because I've always been more interested in music rather than the process of putting it down to something.
Right. Well, just so you're aware, Pete, We're crowdfunding a dressing gown for H at some point. So if there's any Tupperware you'd like us to tack on the bottom of that crowdfund, then just let us know. I mean, now's the time
A little tower of ever decreasing size Tupperware in different colours.
Well, I can. Do you want it washed or kept dirty?
Well, no,
it's starting to sound like one of those conversations, isn't it?
Honestly, if there's a piece of Tupperware that you've always thought, you know, if I won the lottery, that's what I'd have, let us know and we'll stick it on the end of the crowd.
Yeah, the Rolls Royce of Tupperware.
Anyway, let's get on to reprogram the gene, shall we?
Upperware would be the Rolls Royce of Tupperware, wouldn't it?
Lakeland do a lot of Tupperware. I don't know whether it's any good, but boy, do they have a shop full of Tupperware.
Other Tupperware establishments are available.
Yes, quite. Anyway, sorry, I just thought I'd get that in because
no,
I have shopped there before.
He has shoplifted there before.
Indeed, yes. Yeah, don't buy things from.
I do like flat packs. Actually, they're very handy, aren't they? When you've got a big coat on, you know.
Right, let's centre over it. Let's go on to reprogram the gene.
Oh, yeah, no, that was it.
Are we going to do the thing that we said we were going to do? Are we doing that then? You know the thing where you're happy to do but Pete's a little bit wary? Are we going to do that?
Oh, he'll come round. Right, he'll deny it. So
come round to what are you talking
about? It's too late
about?
Now because we've done it.
I'll deny it as well. So it's basically your fault.
It sounded the same to me, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. So at the start of the episode, you will have heard a piece of music that you've never heard before. Mm-hmm. And that piece of music was on an edit that you sent me, H, of Reprogram the Dreams. Reprogram the Gene. So at some point before the final mix was done, but late on in the process, because the edit I've got sounds very, very similar to what went out on the record, there was a different intro. Now, Pete, you've had a little listen to this, haven't you? What do you remember about that? Because that's got you all over it, hasn't it?
Yeah, I do remember it. Now that you played it back. And that's probably all it was just probably one of those jams where I was doing my usual. If I don't know what to do, I just start playing little chords and little patterns of arpeggios or whatever. On you know, a chord-based kind of piece on the bass. Sort of at the same time, everyone's joining in with everybody else. So it's very hard to say exactly where the music exactly comes from. But and Mike and us probably, you know, put it in a folder and at some point it was offered up as a start and it was like, oh, yeah, that's good. And then a better one was found later.
A better one, yeah, and that's the one that has the...
Or a different one, yeah.
Yeah, because it's got the sample in the background of what sounds like a park or a playground or something.
I have a note about that, actually, because I did some homework on this. You'll be amazed to hear, because I'm a worrier, you see, so I always think...
That's the second time you've said it, so we believe
try and do well, yeah. When I heard that, when particularly, because I wrote down... Oh, reminds me of Supertramp, School.
Yeah.
And then I listened to the beginning. I thought, this doesn't sound anything like it. And then the School Playyard thing comes in.
Yeah.
And the little shout at the end is a bit... It reminds me of the scream at the end of the beginning of School by Supertramp. A fantastic track if you've never heard it.
I haven't, I will go away and listen.
Crime of the Century, which is a very, very good album.
Yeah, right. God, yeah, you've got to get onto that. And if you've not heard Crime of the Century... Oh.
I'm a little bit younger classic. Than you two, so oh, I, well, know, yeah. I didn't live through that, you see.
Oh, they were one of those album. Bands as well that sonically completely changed the way people thought about records. They just always sounded amazing. And live as well. They were very, very at the front of... How to make sound better.
I will take that as a recommendation. I'll go away and listen. And I know there's lots of people now listening to this tutting at my lack of knowledge, but I apologise profusely. And I'll go away and listen. But actually, so the bit that we played at the beginning, I think this joins the dots between last week and this week, because Mark said something about that last week, about that thing that he was playing on with Pete that originally was on the song and then didn't make it to the final edit. And I think those little things in there that sound like guitar, from what Mark said, are actually Mark on the keyboard.
Yeah, they could be. Because they both kind of... they both have sounds that same sound similar to each other, you know, that they sometimes use.
So that joins us back to last week. So if you want to stop now and go back and listen to that bit again, now you know what it actually is, feel free. But remember where you are in the podcast and then come back and join us the rest of the conversation. Right. OK. So now we're back to the song itself proper, as in the finished song on the album. So I'm going to jump to you, H. Let's talk a little bit about the lyrics and then we'll pick up on the music.
The lyrics are a bit, they're a bit, what's the word? They're quite freeform, really. They're not so much, it's not really a statement, is it? The statement's in it. But I don't want to be a boy, I don't want to be a girl. It's about being invincible. And I was thinking about that a lot during the pandemic, about how we expect so much of life, and that's a theme that kind of goes through the album to some degree. It's you know, it's there in black and white on Be Hard on Yourself. It's like saying, you know, you're spoiled. You've been spoiled for years. You know, at your very hardest, your life is a blinking bowl of cherries, you know, compared to the life of a wild animal or the life of a lot of people in the third world. So, you know, there's a little bit of that. And I'm addressing myself when I say that. I'm not preaching at other people saying that they've got it so good. I'm talking to myself, but I'm talking about a lot of Western society. This sense that you can fix anything, and we're invincible, and we'll always come up with a solution, which is kind of how we slowly get towards the end to reprogram the gene. We're clever enough, but is there a cure for us? Because we are a plague on the earth, and if you look at humanity from the earth's point of view, it's a problem. You know, there's too many of us. We want too much. We're making too much of a mess. And I don't know, even a couple of thousand years ago, there weren't so many of us that the earth couldn't sustain us, and now it can't. And we just keep growing, and we just keep taking, and we just keep consuming. And we all think we're invincible, and we expect that. So really, that's what it's about. It was written, obviously, in the jaws of COVID, with the pandemic and the some people's frailty very much at the front of the mind, but also I think I reacted to it with a kind of determination that I would rise above it somehow. And then I was sort of taking the piss out of my own determination, really. I was sort of having a laugh at myself for laying the gauntlet down at fate, which I often do. So it's a bit of a, it's a funny, I don't want to be food for the trees. In other words, I don't want to be dead, you know. I don't want to be in a box. I don't want to be feeding the plants from beneath. I want, you know, and then towards the end, there's that sort of, I'm going to be a friend of the earth. Because if I'm not, I will be food for the trees. So I'll be a friend of the earth in another way. So all of that, at once, and a little nod to Greta Thunberg in amongst all of it, because I do kind of get a feeling that the pandemic, although I guess you can't directly link the pandemic consumption and how we've basically raped the world. I think there is a link. There's most definitely a link to modern living, that you can have an outbreak of a disease in China that is at your front door a fortnight later. You know, in that sense, everything is everywhere, and it's not just the internet. Everything really is everywhere now in a way that it never used to be.
So there's a few things in there. I mean, one's that paradox that you're talking about, the fact we can reprogram the gene. We can, you know, we could cure cancer.
You know, well, I mean, what's really strange is that my sister has just been through that very process. Mm. That's incredible that I did it again. You know, I had another Hogstradamus moment and wrote a song called Reprogram the Gene, and that's what they're currently doing with my sister. So maybe I somehow had a premonition of that, God knows how.
But then at the same time, you're saying, well, what's the point if we're then just going to kill the planet?
Yeah. I'm saying that we're the problem. You know, we can cure anything, but there isn't a cure for us, no. Really. But that, maybe that's hopeful.
I love the way that works both ways, you know. Some people probably hadn't even thought of that kind of very Lennon-ish, isn't it?
Yeah.
The way he used to just throw in little things that, if you think about it a bit more, means something completely different.
I do love a double entendre.
Exactly.
Mm. I like, but not as much as a triple entendre.
Let's face it, we've built a podcast on it, but, you know.
Oh, mate.
And to be fair, John would have loved that bit of knitwear as well, so that's also quite. I mean, you've also got that lovely line in there that throws back, haven't you, with Spores on the Breeze. So you're even throwing back to...
to Deserve.
Yes, Deserve, yes.
Yeah, I couldn't resist it.
The other really clever line that I love is the start of the third section, because again we're talking about a song that's in three sections, you know. Mm-hmm. So as with an hour before it's dark, three distinct sections to the song, and then we've got lockdown, knockdown, country in tears, and it's the country in tears line that's just genius.
It is,
because a lot of people have forgotten that, you know, because that tearing thing actually didn't last that long. I mean, we lived through it, but if you talk to people about the pandemic, that's probably not the thing they remember.
Yeah.
But that crazy few weeks or months where you could do something in one part of the country and you couldn't do it in another part of the country, and, you know, and of course, again, it's all in the spelling, isn't it? Because that's not what you think. Your initial thought is, oh, yeah, country's heartbroken.
Yeah, which it kind of was.
I was also thinking, because I went through the lyrics and thought it might be interesting to get, you know, my perspective might be different to because normally I just say to Steve, so what are these songs about then? And then when I answer questions, I do. Honestly, I'm sure everybody else does as well.
Usually about a year after the album's out, somebody slides up and goes, what's any of this about then? I go, oh, for fuck's sake.
But then, and then when I do listen to the lyrics, it's genius. Like the knitting line in the song on Fear, you know.
That's the levers, isn't it?
One of my favourite lines. In tears, remind me of the kind of erasure of the upper classes and the politicians, you know, where they suddenly thought, oh, we can actually do what we like. You know, I can drive up to the north of England. Nobody else is allowed to do any of that kind of thing. But I'm above the law here because I'm a politician, or I'm a politician's friend, or whatever. Whatever the situation was with that bloke at the time.
That would be Dom, wouldn't it?
We all know who I'm talking about, don't we?
Dom with Barnard Castle.
And, you know, it just made you think, you know, when people couldn't see their relatives for the last time or go to funerals or anything. It was just... So anyway, I thought that was a very poignant line myself.
One line in particular I was going to ask you about, age, just in terms of your view on it now. Do you think it's taken years to shake it?
Absolutely. Yeah. We're still shaking it economically. We're still shaking it emotionally. A lot of people are still, you know, there's a lot of psychological problems among school kids now as a consequence of the time they had out. That's almost universally acknowledged by, you know, the teaching profession and the child psychologist, is that a lot of kids have struggled as a consequence of it. Economically, we're most definitely reeling from it. I think most of the world is still reeling from it. You know, we're all recovering. But, you know, it's knocked everyone sideways in the same way that, maybe to a lesser extent, but in the same way that a war would. You know, you get through it, and then there's, you know, you carry on when it's all finished, but it can take a bloody long time behind the scenes. The politicians are never going to really give you the bottom line. They'll use it as an excuse. I mean, the Tories tend to use it as an excuse for, you know, oh, nothing to do with Brexit, the state we're in. Because Brexit was our idea. It wasn't that. It was the pandemic, this terrible thing that we could never have seen coming. It had nothing to do with, a game we were all playing just to see who won from the schoolyards of Eton. Sorry, I'm wandering now into hardline chippy northernerdom. But
I was letting you go because I thought it was beautiful. Just saves me saying it.
No, we definitely, you know, shaking this one is going to take years, and still is, I think.
And there's always a chance of the next one coming up in, you know, 10 or 20 years or 30 years' time, because it's going to be like flu, isn't it? You're going to get waves of it at certain times. In 100 years, actually. That usually sort of seems to happen, doesn't it?
Well, in one respect, that's quite reassuring.
Yeah.
In one respect. You know. So come on, let's get to the music then, because it is three relatively distinct sections, the song. Any memories, Pete, on how it came together?
Well, I mean, I do remember being in the room. And,
excellent.
You know,
at least one of you does.
Steve had these guitar chords. I'm going to carry on. I'm going to pretend you're not talking over.
Yeah. Tune him out, Pete.
And they just kind of grooved. They for me, when we all sort of piled in and joined in as we do, it just had a great. It had a kind of, I don't know, it was sort of indie rocky, but in a really kind of good way. And the way the lyrics fell across what was going on was really good as well. It had a vibe. It had a really good vibe. And I think we all felt it, and we all thought, there's something really good here. You know, if we're careful with this.
We're careful.
Don't let it... Either because usually with those sort of things, and particularly at the start when you're jamming, it just goes on for hours until somebody gets bored and changes what's going on. And we had to just make sure that when we actually distilled what was great about it, we kept the essence of what it was. Because if you're re-recording things or arranging things, you can kind of miss some of what's really good.
So does that mean that this was a relatively late addition then? Because Rothers wasn't around for the early parts of the jams, was he? He was kind of self-isolating. So does that push this one a bit further back?
I think it might have been when he first came back in. I mean, right. I'm talking off the top of my head here. But it seems to me that it was probably when he kind of came back and felt safe doing so, rightly, there's kind of when we all get together again, and I'm hoping this might happen when I join back in with the band. There's usually a bit of an energy and a bit of a buzz and a bit of a, this is all a bit fresh and a bit new. you know, thing going on, and that quite often can, you know, sort of get you know, really good things can be born out of that.
Because it does have a sense of energy, doesn't it? It has a sense of something that was, that kind of happened spontaneously, and you've managed to capture that, that thing. It doesn't feel overworked. It feels, you know.
And that's one of the things I really like about it is that in the past, we've tried to do this kind of thing a bit in the past, and you can fail miserably, and we probably have, you know, with certain songs that just, they just didn't have what the initial jam started with, you know. They've got a simile of it, and it's a very nicely arranged piece of music, but it hasn't got the it factor that the original idea was kind of showing. And this song, I think in recent years we've kind of got over how we can achieve that kind of thing, and in this song it's kind of spot on.
It's quite unusual for us to, and I kind of had to dig my heels in a little bit, because musically the band gets bored really quickly. Always, it's like, right, we've been around that twice now, and there hasn't been a key change. What's going on? Yes. And that voice was voiced, you know, during this. You know how it changes from the, it's kind of going, and then it goes the down. Everybody wanted that in sooner than me. And I was going, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Make them wait for it. Keep it as an insistent thing that goes round and round and round, so that when that does change, it's like a wave breaking, you know, the old Pink Floyd trick, you know.
Exactly.
The chord, you know, when the chord change finally hits you, it's almost like an orgasm in itself, because it's just stayed in that one place for so long. And I'm reminded of something that Mike Scott from the Waterboys said. He said, from the Velvet Underground, I learnt the importance of an insistent driving groove without musical changes. And I think there is something, although it's not a rip-off in any way that I can actually think of, cause, and God knows I've tried to work out what this song sounds like, but it feels a bit like the Waterboys somehow. And I agree. I love
the way it does that. You know, it's got that coolness.
But I couldn't give you a Waterboys song that sounds like it either, you know.
I know. You can't reference it, but it's kind of got that vibe, hasn't it?
It's got an insistent driving round, you know, round and round, that move that moves and moves and moves and makes you wait. Yeah. I was sort of channeling, again, although I couldn't give you an example of a song it sounds like, but I was channeling Patti Smith as well. I was sort of channeling that sort of New York punky round and round and round, the energy's more important than the chord changes thing with this. And that's quite unusual for us, because we normally have the opposite ethos, you know. Band gets bored, it's not interesting, it's not going anywhere, it needs to go somewhere. And, you know, a lot of the time that's true, and it's something to think about, and it might be part of what makes us really special. But every now and again you get something, and you know, I'm just going, wait, let's go round again. And everybody's going, no, and I'm going, yeah, wait. So I'm sure I can write another 30 yards of words to justify this. So that it did have that. I'd got Patti Smith somehow, although what, I don't know. An idea of Patti Smith rather than necessarily her music, and an idea of Mike Scott.
Well, she was a poet as well, wasn't she? And she wrote with Kurt Cobain, actually, I found out. Which is jaw-dropping, isn't it?
Mm.
I thought, blimey, yeah, she was writing some of the lyrics for Nirvana songs.
Right.
which I found out from a book I read a while ago.
She's written a book recently called Just Kids.
Yeah.
That I heard reviewed. I've not read it yet.
So, you know, a smart cookie.
And back to lyrics briefly, H. I'm just trying to get kind of sense of timeline and where it came together, because obviously it does sound a little bit like this was further on because Rothers was in the room. And I'm then looking at the lyrics, looking at that lyric again, you know, lockdown, knockdown, country in tears. The tears was not the first part of, you know, that's a way through the pandemic. That was when we were trying to do staged opening and all these kind of things. So that lyric's not one you've had on the shelf for ages and ages and ages. It's
no, that was very much written sort of on the spot during the, you know, during the pandemic, obviously, and during the arrangement of the song. I think some of the earlier ones, I Don't Want to Be a Boy, I Don't Want to Be a Girl, clever, happy, clever, no pain whatsoever, wants a piece of mind, I want to share your thoughts, want to waste your time. I think I had those on the shelf from some point in the past. And I don't know where I got Dr. Frankenstein and the Disembodied Brain in the box full of LED light from. I think that might have been some dream.
Yeah, but I love that because there's a whole thing about consumerism there.
Yeah, and modern life and modern tech, you know, next year it'll be cheaper and 14 times as bright, which, yeah, you know, everything is these days. Just keeping up with how the speed at which everything is advancing. So I was throwing all those things in.
Mm. Which is, you know, and there's a lot of that in this song. There's a lot of, I mean, there's an underlying thing, yeah, absolutely. But there's odd little things just thrown in that are just really, you know, really prophetic or really interesting or, you know, that are almost throwaway. You could miss them. But, you know, you don't bang on about the consumerism thing, but the consumerism is feeding the issues that we're creating for the planet.
Well, there was a mobile phone company called Orange, and their strap line on their adverts was "the future's bright, the future's orange."
Yeah.
So that's where I've seen the future. It ain't orange; it's green. You know, we've got to let the consumerism go and look after the planet. That's really what that line's saying. So It was a real mix-up of stuff, all at once, but some of which was written in, you know, in real time while we were recording as a reflection of where we all were. Mm.
I think it's one of my favourite songs. I think it's one of my favourite songs live as well. I think it's just got such an energy to it.
Yeah, it's good. It is a nice thing to play live.
And I was going to ask that, actually, because Mark last week had, you know, with a bit of conversation last week about Be Hard on Yourself as being a tough track to play live, particularly if you start...
Shocker. It's a shocker.
Yeah. So that's three-fifths of the band feel that way.
It's a great song. And when we play it well, it's a real sense of achievement. But it is...
Do you stop and give yourselves a round of applause?
Well, practically. Yeah. Because it's just hard work. It's hard work and there's... And for very little gain, because we're sweat. I mean, you know, I'm playing chords, lots of weird changes, lots of kind of little things that happen rhythmically, and every note and every chord is almost different in every part of the song. And if you're not careful, you really can get lost. Hmm. And then a song like this one, Reprogram the Gene, I've briefly forgotten where we were. Is just comparatively so much easier, and yet the audience still get the same, if not more, out of it, because it's just something they can, you know, jump up and down to.
It's a gum-chewing groove. I think if I was a bass player, I would chew gum while I was playing.
Yeah, exactly. So. Low-slung Thunderbird bass, channeling Pete Way, because he was great in when he was... A little bit here. Well, he's probably still great now, actually. I shouldn't say that, should I? I haven't seen him for years. But I used to really like his style and his playing.
That's where you should live. You should live in a road called Pete Way.
I should.
That's what they call it in Pete's house. I'm going back to Pete Way.
Why, aye, man.
Well, the things that need to come out of today, then, we need to now make sure that everybody's aware that if you play Be Hard on Yourself in the future, you deserve an extra special round of applause when it's finished. But at the same time, if you play Reprogram the Gene, everybody at the end is going to go, well, yeah, it was all right, but it's not like it's complicated, is it?
No, because it's... having said it's a simple song, sometimes it's much, much harder to get that sense of kind of what you're trying to create while you're playing it. Like the kind of that throwaway style of the Faces or like the Waterboys or whatever. Those kind of grooves always sound like anyone can play them, but they can't.
They can't.
You have to, it has to be actually really tight and really precise. So there's probably, it's just that you don't have all the thoughts about all the notes and where you are and what time you're supposed to be in and what you're doing next and will you get there, you know, while running around a stage performing.
But for the future, it stands far more chance of staying in the set because actually as a band, it's an easier thing. Not easier, but a thing you enjoy playing.
No, I think you're wrong there because I think that you're underestimating the need to show off. And prove that something really complex can be achieved, which for certain members of the band is more important than anything.
I know. I used to be one of those. I've seen the error of my ways. It's much better just to have one, play one open string and look cool, I think, these days.
Right.
It's about where my level is. You know, I'm trying to get my level down to there, you know.
Well, we're going to pause briefly and we're going to go for a bit of diary because we've got definitely one section of diary left from those most recent tour dates, which I think is London, I think. Got a sneaking suspicion?
Oh, okay. Is it? Yeah, I've because I read quite a bit out and then gave it to you and now I don't know what we've used and not used.
There's one bit left.
Is there?
Okay. We've done the Paris and the Utrecht, but there's one bit left, which I think is London. I think it's a day off.
Okay, Hammersmith. In a hotel in Hammersmith.
Yes.
When I nearly went for a burger with Lewis.
Probably no point reading it now.
Weren't we in a really nice hotel in...
Ooh.
Oh, were we in the Novotel? We might have been.
I think you're having a flashback 25 years to a really nice hotel.
No, because last time we were in London... I went for a walk what's he called?
Should we go for diary, Pete? You can tell us afterwards.
That's fine. You go to in a loop for the next 20 minutes while I read this bit of diary, and then we'll go back in as you come out of the loop.
We went to...
September 29th, London, day off. Today we say bye for now to Charlie and must abandon the bus. I had stuff everywhere, but as I gazed into my bunk, wondering how best to empty it and take it all downstairs, while my fellow musos attempt to negotiate the narrow staircase up and down all at once, Lewis produced a roll of bin liners like a rabbit out of a hat. Clearly he's been around. I thanked him and emptied my bus into a black bin liner so I could get it all downstairs in one hit. Downstairs, the door was opened to reveal the semi-underground car park of the Novotel Hammersmith. We each negotiated our possessions and bags while we waited for Frenchie to procure room keys. Ian went and found a hotel baggage trolley and we balanced our luggage onto it. Lewis has a large suitcase, several bags, and an electric drill. We made our way in, steadying the unstable stack of luggage as we entered the building and the elevators, and delicately rumbled out of the lift onto the 9th floor. I'm in room 924, just opposite the lifts, so didn't have far to go. Extricated my stuff from the tower of bags and installed myself in the room. It was good to be alone at last. On a tour bus, you're only alone when you're on the shelf. Set up the laptop, microphone and headphones and spent the rest of the day reading and editing this diary and then nailing this week's podcast together. Ant and I had recorded it in the restaurant of the Novotel Sheffield the other day. I had half a plan to go and have dinner with Lewis in the Wolseley restaurant on Piccadilly, but in the end it never materialised. Ended up wandering out around 8 p.m. and having grilled salmon on Shepherd's Bush Road in a place called the Block House. It was pretty average, and the music nearly drove me away before I'd ordered. I'm fucking glad I don't live in London. I find the loneliness around all the people almost too much to bear.
Hampstead, that was it. We went up to Hampstead. We walked up to the village because we were staying at the Marriott. But actually, this has nothing to do with this conversation because that was when we played the Roundhouse. I'll probably tell everybody that next time I'm on when you talk about the Roundhouse. Assuming you'll invite me back, of course.
Oh, cool, yeah, grief. Grief.
We'll definitely invite you back.
Oh, yeah.
Whether we'll definitely talk about the Roundhouse is another thing entirely.
Well, I'll drop it in anyway.
Pop it.
I'm weird, man.
Right, okay. Should we go back in then?
Yeah.
Yeah, we start proper.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Mm. And we're back.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say now. I've been so overwhelmed by Pete's pramble. That I'm a little bit... I'll tell you what I do need to mention. Actually, there's a few things I need to mention, Pete.
I don't ramble. That's the first thing you need to mention.
No, of course you don't. But the last time you were on, I was looking back over files and this, that and the other, and I also saw an email. And the last time you were on, we shared your recipe for soda bread.
Yeah, we did.
We did, yeah.
I remember that.
So have we got... Is there anything else in your little recipe book that we need to be sharing at this point in time?
Well, I think... As we mentioned Tupperware, I should probably share the recipe for a fantastic sandwich that I sometimes make.
Oh, yes, go on.
I don't really.
All right, okay.
Oh, all right.
I'm disappointed now.
I should have come prepared, shouldn't I?
You should have come prepared.
Because the last time I was on, I was thinking, well, the next time I'll have something else. And I mean, I have made banana bread.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
With chocolate chips. And the recipe made it very, very sweet banana bread. I mean, boy, was it sweet and chocolate chippy.
Right. Milk or plain?
Oh, I think they were plain. I think you have to use plain when you're cooking.
I agree with you. So I make banana bread with chocolate chips.
There you go.
And I use plain ones.
Yeah. But you have to halve the amount of chocolate chips.
You do.
Unless you've got a stupidly sweet tooth.
Yes, you do. You do. But I must admit, I do like a banana bread with dark chocolate chips in.
Yeah, they're very fantastic, nice, aren't they?
Where do you stand on banana bread, H?
Because
this is a pandemic thing, by the way, isn't it? Everybody's making banana
everyone
bread.
Everyone was cooking, weren't they?
Yeah.
Where do I stand on banana bread? Yeah, I'm up for a piece of banana bread if somebody else is cooking it. I'm not a great cooker of things. I do an omelette, toast, I'm very good at, and...
very good at toast.
And...
what about the beans? Do you do the beans on the toast?
Beans, yes. On a good day, I can open a can without having to go to hospital. What was the other thing I do? I do another thing. A more time-consuming and complicated thing. I do make chili con carne once in a blue moon, but that's the chili con carne recipe that Lynetta gave me is only a couple of steps short of building an atom bomb in terms of how complicated it is. So I do struggle, and it does take most of the day.
Right.
And do you have to buy the beans and then soak them overnight?
I probably should have. No, I don't.
Because there's that whole thing about the beans, isn't there?
There is.
If you're a purist.
Yeah.
Do I look like a fucking purist?
My goodness. Is this what they're all like? Or is it just because I'm on?
in that.
People pay for this, do they?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, up until this week.
Well, yes, quite. Yeah, this one should probably be. No, it shouldn't. It should be expensive, shouldn't it? Because I've just come out of hospital.
Yeah, this should be the episode that breaks the podcast.
Yeah. There you go.
There was a lovely moment there where you were talking about beans. And in H in his white jumper had the look of a blank canvas about him because he had no idea what you were talking about.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. Well, they're kind of, because they're not, they're poisonous, aren't they?
They are if they're not soaked. But they come pre-soaked now. You get them out of the tin.
Yeah, you can get them out of the tin. Yeah. But, you know, purists would be.
That's today's title.
But yes. I tell you what, never try making your own pesto. That just doesn't, it takes too long and it's not worth it.
Right. Oh, no, I don't think I would try.
But the only thing I do make regularly, actually, is porridge. I'm a very good porridge maker. Because we have quite a lot of porridge in our house.
Where do you stand on the overnight oats?
Yeah, I do like overnight oats if I'm in the right sort of hotel. You know.
Right, okay. But you don't make them yourself?
No, I haven't done. But I have thought about doing that. Right. Because I sometimes have yogurt as well.
Lynetta does that in a little jar thing.
Yeah, yeah. Supposed to be really, really good. I mean, I've had them in those sort of hotels that have overnight oats. Not all Travelodges don't, for example, but some hotels do.
Right.
Well, I'll never know because she won't let me anywhere near them. She says... Yeah, don't you go anywhere near that. A lot of effort went into making that. And I'm never likely to find out what they taste like.
Okay, so on the back of that then, is it possible, as Pete's not got a recipe to hand, can we share Lynetta's recipe for overnight oats?
Yeah, why not? I don't know what it is. I'd have to go and get her. I think she's out with the dog.
Well, we don't need it till it goes out, do we?
Oh, okay.
She's got a few days to get it together.
Oh, I'm sure I can share something of curious that Lynetta does.
Lovely, lovely. Well, as we've been going for an hour, and by the way, Pete, you have been the most TCD guest we've ever had.
Oh, thank you. Is that a compliment, is it?
I think you should go away and think about it. That's all I can say, really. So you have to come back.
I will. I will. Next week?
Listen, you can come on. You can have your own section. I mean, we've run out of diary. We can have a little section of Pete in the middle of every show, you know, every episode for me.
Just saying something mad.
Winning idea.
So thank you very much. You're very kind.
It's a pleasure.
Yes.
Yes, thanks, Pete.
Lovely. And we'll see you all next week. We're going to move on to Murder Machines, I guess.
Oh.
So we need to... You need to nominate somebody for next week.
Well, it might be worth asking Ian about that, just for the sheer hell he went through to play that live.
Ooh.
He might have plenty to say.
Might be expletive ridden then next week.
click tracks that speed up and down. We had this thing where you know, because it's all going go, 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 you know, like that, so you've got to get all of that in time, which is an absolute nightmare. And... anyway, I'm. This is for another episode, but
you're talking about next week's show.
There
now.
Is plenty to discuss.
For the sake of this, I'm going to be Ian. Okay.
Okay.
Not that fucking song.
There you go. Could be a short podcast.
Thanks for listening to The Corona Diaries. It featured Steve Hogarth with the insights and me, Ant Short, with the questions. If you enjoyed the podcast, please consider subscribing and maybe leaving a review, as this will help others find it. You could even share with other like-minded souls, should the mood take you. This has been an A Short Stories production.